We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past and smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, we'll enjoy some intrigue and adventure with Crime Does Not Pay and Clothes Make the Woman. But first, let's head out west for a visit with Hopalong Cassidy. Hopalong Cassidy came to Mutual in January of 1950 after early day TV screenings of the 1930s films had made the character a national sensation. The character was created by Clarence Milford in a series of pulp western stories. By 1934, Harry Sherman received film rights and he hired William Boyd. Under Boyd, Hoppy would never smoke, always believed in fair play, and forever refused to touch liquor. The radio show Hopalong Cassidy was a distinctive cowboy detective program where listeners seldom knew the identity of the evil ones until Hoppy tripped them up and brought them to justice. First heard on Sundays for General Mills, Hopalong Cassidy moved to Saturday evenings on CBS from 1950 through 1952. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear and Hopalong Cassidy in Right Rope, Wrong Neck from February of 1952. Another classic radio show from the golden age of radio here on Yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent. Oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Marr, Jameis, and Andy.
Action and suspense out of the Old West comes the most famous hero of them all, Hopalong Cassidy, starring William Boyd. The Ring of the Silver Spurs heralds the most amazing man ever to ride the prairies of the early West, Hopalong Cassidy, the same Hoppy you cheer in motion pictures, and the same California you've laughed at a million times. Raw courage and quick shooting have built a legend around this famous hero. Hopalong is a name to be feared, respected, and admired. For this great cowboy rides the trails of adventure and excitement. William Boyd as Hopalong Cassidy and Andy Clyde as California. Well, Hoppy, what about our story?
We call this adventure Right Rope, Wrong Neck. The reason we call it that is because there was a rope involved. A rope that hung above a certain grim scaffolding in the territorial penitentiary at Battery Rock. And a neck involved, too. A neck that belonged to a friend of California's and mine, Fred Oakes. Fred had been sent to Battery Rock to hang for the murder of old Judge Melchior. But the judge's death had really been an accident. And as soon as we had proved this to everyone's satisfaction, California and I headed for Battery Rock with a signed release in our pockets. We were nearing our destination on the third day out, and neither one of us were prepared for the shock that was in store for us.
Hoppy, this is getting to be an awful long ride. How much further is it?
Oh, what are you complaining about? We've only been on the road for 3 days.
Yeah, I know that, but I'm getting awful saddle-weary.
So am I. But it's for a good cause. We'll be able to take Fred back to his wife.
Yeah. It'll sure be good to see them two together again,
it
huh?
Sure will.
Hey, Hoppy, ain't that it up there ahead?
Yeah, that's it, all right.
Big place, ain't it?
Sure is.
I'd hate to try to get over that high fence.
Yeah, pretty big gate, too. And there's something else. See those four cupolos up there?
Yeah, what's cupolos?
Those boxes at each corner of the building.
Oh, that's what them is, huh?
Yeah. And in each one of those cupolos is a guard with a gun. That's four pretty good reasons to keep you from going over that fence, huh?
Yeah. Well, here we are.
Oh, boy. Hi there. Open up. We got business with the warden.
What kind of business, mister?
Official business. We're bringing good news for one of your boarders. Ever see anything like this before?
Yep. That's from the governor's office. It's got his seal on it. It's all right, I guess. What's your names?
Name's Cassidy. They call me Hopalong. This is California Carlson.
Heard of you fellas. All right, give me your guns now. I'll open the gates and you can go on in.
Thanks. Here's mine.
Here you are, fella.
Thanks. You can have them back again on your way out. Wait a second now and I'll get the gates for you. There, go on in.
Which way do we go?
Right over there to your left. There's a hitch rail over there. To find the board, and you take that outside staircase right next to it. That's his office upstairs there. Right off the landing.
Thanks. Come on, California.
We're all right with you, Hoppy.
It's a big place here, isn't it? Yeah, here we are.
Yep, and I guess that there's the staircase.
Yeah, might as well go up.
Sure is going to be a pleasure seeing Fred's face when he walks out of this place. It's going to be worth all the work, of course.
It is at that. Well, here we are. Just walk in, I guess. Warden Davis?
It's me, stranger. Come in.
Thanks. I'm Hopalong Cassidy, and this is California Carlson.
Howdy.
Here's something I think you'll be glad to see.
Oh?
Yeah, go ahead. Open it up, mister.
Why, this isn't worth the paper it's written on.
What do you mean? Why isn't it?
This is an order for the release of Fred Oakes.
Oh, certainly it is. We're taking him out of here. That's why we rode all this way, to bring you that release.
Well, you're just a matter of about 30 hours too late.
What?
Hey, what does that mean?
Means that yesterday morning, Fred Oakes broke jail.
He what?
Well, when we get him back this time, he'll hang. You see, he not only broke jail, but in doing so, he killed one of my guards.
It was a shock to Hoppy to learn that his friend, Fred Oakes, whom he had cleared of a murder charge and expected to free from jail, had made a break and killed a guard in the process. Now, he asks Warden Davis some pointed questions.
Warden, I don't understand this. Fred had known he was going to be released. He'd have never tried to break jail. Why wasn't he told about it?
Told about it? How could I tell him something I didn't know myself?
Well, why didn't you know about it?
Maybe because no one saw fit to tell me.
Oh, but that's not so. Governor Martin sent a messenger as soon as he heard that California and I had evidence that it'd clear Fred.
Messenger?
He wanted to make sure that Fred wouldn't be executed before his release could get here.
Then all I can say is that something must have happened to the messenger. I give you my word, I knew nothing about this till just now.
Well, I don't understand this.
Neither do I. But I've told you the facts.
Maybe something happened to that fellow the governor sent, Hoppy.
Well, something must have. What I want to know is whether it was an accident or something that was made to happen.
If it was something that was made to happen, then someone must have had a motive for Oakes' death. Someone wanted him to hang.
Exactly. Do you know of anyone like that, Warden?
No, I don't. But you know more of his affairs than I do. Perhaps you can think of someone.
No. No, I can't. I can't see how anyone could have gained by it. By the way, Warden, how did Fred manage his escape?
No one seems to know. All we know is that somehow he managed to get out of his cell just before dawn.
Well, how could that be?
The first anyone knew about it was when he showed up in the yard. Then he was fired at, but he cleared the gate and got away.
Well, he must have had help.
No doubt. I'd like to know where that help came from. This is the seventh escape in the last 6 months. One more and it'll mean my job.
But what have you done to get Fred back?
Sent two of my best men after him. Mahoney and Taggart.
Are they guards?
Yeah, they used to be deputy sheriffs. They're good men on the trail. I've ordered them not to come back without him.
I see. Then that's taken care of. California, you and I'd better get started. We got a different job to do.
Anything you say, Hoppy?
What's on your mind, Cassidy?
That messenger the governor sent here. I'm going to find out what became of him.
I've looked everywhere for that messenger fella, Hoppy. My notion is he ain't to be found.
I've found him, California.
You have? What's he doing?
Right now, not much of anything. He's dead. You see, California? He's lying over there, and all the signs have been made to look like he'd been shot on the way to the pen.
Yeah?
But look here. This is where he was really killed. And this sign shows that he was killed while riding away from the pen. In other words, he wasn't killed till he'd been there and was already on his way back.
Then the warden lied to us.
That remains to be seen. There may be another explanation.
If there is, I'd admire to hear it. I reckon we better hightail it back there and put a few more questions to that feller, Hoppy. And the sooner the better.
No, I thought so at first. Something else has occurred to me.
What's that?
Those guards Davis sent out after Fred. Mahoney and Taggart. I wonder if they catch Fred, if he'll ever get back to the van.
What makes you say that?
Fred killed a guard, California. Might just be that they'd rather shoot him down and take him prisoner.
Yeah?
Or shoot him down afterwards and claim he tried to escape. Things like that have happened before, you know.
Darn tootin' they have. But they got a couple of days head start on us. How do we get to Fred before they do, and how do we know where to look for him anyway?
I think the first thing he'll do is try to see his wife.
Yeah, sure he will. And Mahoney and Taggart know that as well as we do.
Of course they do. But what they probably don't know is that she isn't living at Miles City any longer.
No. Where is she?
She's at Buffalo Point. She moved there right after the trial to get away from the talk. Only Fred and I knew that.
Then we head for Buffalo Point. Huh?
Right. Fred will have to hide out and take a roundabout route. If we hurry, we may be able to reach there almost as soon as he does. Come on, boy. Let's go.
Oh, boy. Oh. Now, you stay right here. I got to see if Mary's to home tonight. Now, don't you make no noise, fella. Mary?
Fred! Oh, Fred!
Hi there, honey.
Oh, Fred, you're back. I knew you were coming, but I never expected you this soon. Oh, darling, it's so wonderful to see you again. Almost impossible to believe.
Yeah. But, honey, you said you knew I was coming. They don't know I was headed this way, do they?
Of course. Hoppy told me you'd come just as soon as they set you free. But I thought...
Set me free? Hey, what is this? What's all this about Hoppy and setting me free and everything? Come on, what is this?
But, Fred, Hoppy got your release.
Release? I don't know anything about any release. Look, honey. Don't you know why I'm here? I'm here because I broke out.
Oh, no, Fred. No.
That's only the half of it. If they catch me this time, they'll hang me for sure, but...
Then we'll have to get out of here.
Huh?
Well, I don't know what this is all about, and I don't want to know either. All I know is that if they're after you, they're not going to get your back. Come on, Fred, help me, please. We'll get the things we need together and get out of here just as soon as we can.
Yeah, now, wait a minute. I'm heading for the border.
Well, what of it? Where else would you go?
You can't go with me.
But I am going with you. I'm not going to allow you out of my sight again. Not till I have to anyway, and I hope I never have to. Come on, let's not argue, Fred. We haven't much time.
Hey, wait a second.
What?
Thought I heard something. You stay right there. I'll get behind the door here. If anyone comes in, you tell them I...
But someone has come in.
Why, you... Oh. Oh, it's you, Hoppy.
Yeah.
I was afraid... Oh, look, Hoppy, you're just in time. I'm plenty glad to see you. I got to head for the border. Mary's coming with me. I can't wait.
Wait a second. Not so fast, Fred.
Huh?
Before we go any further, I'd like to ask you one question.
What's that?
Did you kill that guard at the penitentiary?
Yeah. Yeah, I killed him, Hoppy, but I couldn't help it. You got to believe me.
Sure.
I didn't even intend to kill him. It was just an accident. Hey, what kind of a joke is this, Hoppy? What's that gun for?
I'm sorry, Fred, but I'm taking you back.
Oh, you don't mean that.
I do mean it.
I thought you were my friend.
But I am your friend.
That's what you say. From where I stand, you look more like a dirty dog.
Fred, I feel like a dog. But you've killed a man, and you'll have to pay for it.
When Hoppy arrested him for the murder of the guard at Battery Rock, Fred Oakes was bitter in his denunciation of his one-time friend. But Hoppy felt that he had no choice, that he was only doing what his duty demanded. Shortly afterwards, they started on the return journey to Battery Rock, accompanied by California. And now we see them early in the morning after they've made their first camp.
California.
Yeah, Hoppy?
I think today we'll cut a little farther over to the north to avoid the main trails.
Why?
I don't want to take a chance on running into Mahoney and Taggart. I wouldn't be surprised if they weren't too far away from us right now.
Neither would I, Hoppy. I think you get the right idea.
Well, why so anxious to dodge him?
Well, if they take you in, Fred, I'm not so sure you'll reach the pen alive. They're guards. And after all, you killed a guard, you know.
Oh.
The way things are, if we run into them, they'll have the authority to take over.
Yeah, they would.
California and I wouldn't have any right to refuse to give you up. So it's better to dodge them.
Yeah, I get the idea now.
We'll be on our way pretty soon. But first, there's some things I'd like to ask you.
Yeah? What?
For one, how'd you ever get out of your cell?
Hoppy, you'll likely not believe this, but for the life of me, I don't know. Somebody unlocked that cell during the night while I was asleep. When I woke up just before sunup, I found the door unlocked and a gun sitting inside.
I can believe you, all right. In other words, someone was trying to frame you.
Well, maybe.
Well, who would want to frame you? Who'd have a reason?
I don't know, Hoppy.
The warden and I were discussing that.
Hoppy, up until I made this break, I never figured I had an enemy in the world. It's a cinch nobody stands to gain anything by seeing me killed.
I don't know. It's got me stumped.
Well, you won't get any help from me. I can't give it to you.
Well, you would if you could, I know. Well, there's something else.
What's that, Hoppy?
I've known you for a long time, Fred. I've always figured you to be pretty level-headed. What made you kill that guard?
I didn't mean to, Hoppy. I told you that.
But still, you did. How come?
Well, it happened just when I was making for the gate. He popped up in front of me right out of nowhere. All I did was fire over his head to scare him.
Yeah.
You see, he started to aim at me with that shotgun he was carrying.
How'd you know you killed him? You didn't stop to examine him, did you?
No, I just happened to look back when I topped the gate. Could tell from the way he was lying on his back that he must have been dead.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, I don't... Hey, wait a second. I thought you told me that when you tried to fire over his head, he was aiming at you.
He was. Just starting to, I mean.
Then how come he was lying on his back?
Huh?
Hey, I think you see what you're getting at, Hoppy.
Of course. If you'd hit him from in front, he should have been lying on his face.
How come?
It'll happen that way 99 times out of 100. I've never seen an exception. He shouldn't have been lying on his back unless you shot him there.
But I'm telling you the truth, Hoppy. He was facing me. He had his...
Of course you're telling the truth. As long as you've admitted killing him, what reason would you have for lying? But you didn't kill him.
What?
Someone else must have. Someone who shot him in the back.
Say, you think I can be so, Hoppy?
It must be. Was anyone else firing at the time?
Yeah, but it was dark, so I couldn't see just who was and who wasn't, Hoppy. But it sounded to me right then like everything was aimed in my direction.
Then anyone might have done it. I'm not taking you back to the pen.
I don't understand,
this
Hoppy.
This changes things.
If you didn't kill that guard, I want to find out who did before they get their hands on you. You get aboard that horse of yours, Fred, and we'll...
And if he does, I'll blast him right off it again.
What is this?
Oh, hello, Mahoney. You're all under arrest, all three of you.
You're Taggart and Mahoney.
That's right, I'm Taggart. Who are you two?
My name's Cassidy, and this is California Carlson. We were
not just... interested in faked explanations, Cassidy. You and Carlson are under arrest for planning to help this killer to escape. We... Hey, what in blazes?
Next time you try to arrest anyone, you'd better take their guns, Taggart. I'm told you and Mahoney are ex-deputies. You should have known better.
You won't get far, Cassidy. We're not
going
to stay.
We're not going anyplace.
Huh?
We're going to Battery Rock with you.
What's the idea?
We don't mind going with you. We just don't care about going under arrest, that's all, Taggart. And as long as you're taking Fred, we want to go with you. We figure that way Fred will have a better chance of getting to Battery Rock alive. Any objections?
Do us any good if we made any?
None at all.
And we won't make none. But you'll be sorry for this, Cassidy. Wait and see if you ain't.
No, I'm not interested in putting you and Carlson under arrest, Cassidy.
Thanks, Warden.
Now, as a matter of fact, from what you've told me, I agree with you that Oakes may not be guilty. A jury isn't likely to agree with you, though.
It very likely wouldn't.
You won't be able to clear Oakes this time unless you can show who did kill that guard.
I agree with you.
Which still leaves us with the problem of trying to figure who could gain anything by doing Oakes harm.
Does it, Warden?
Well, doesn't it?
I've been thinking this over, Warden. I've got a hunch we've been attacking this whole problem from the wrong angle. I don't think anyone cared what happened to Fred.
Then why was that messenger killed? Whoever killed him wanted Oakes hung, didn't they?
I don't think so. I think they merely wanted Fred to believe he was going to be hanged.
Why?
So when he got a chance, he'd make a break.
I still say why.
So that that guard could be murdered under cover of that break.
Say, maybe you're right. They
didn't want Fred killed. They wanted to kill the guard. Fred was just going to be the goat. Say, have you got a file on that guard, Warden? What was his name?
Jackson. Yeah, just a second.
Yes, I have his file right over here. Won't take a second here. I'll have quite a bit of information about him, of course. We always keep the... Cassidy.
What? What is it?
It's gone. Jackson's file is gone.
California. California.
Hoppy, what is it?
I'm riding to Cedar Butte. You stay here and keep an eye on Fred.
How long are you going to be gone?
I don't know. A couple of days at least. Maybe longer.
What you going for?
To look up Jackson's background. He's that dead guard. He came from Cedar Butte. Maybe they can tell me what I want to know over there.
What's that?
Tell you when I get back. I'm in a hurry. Come on, Topper.
Oh, but Hoppy, wait. Doggone. When that Hoppy's in a hurry, he sure ain't gonna be hindered. Doggone. Doggone, Warden. I don't know what's happened to Hoppy. All I know is the same as you do, that he's been gone a week, and he said he'd likely be gone only a couple of days.
Something must have happened to him.
Maybe it has, but...
Hoppy! I was gone longer than I expected. Because after going to Cedar Butte, I had to go on to the state capitol. Warden, I found out plenty.
What's that?
Well, in the first place, Jackson wasn't the guard after all. He only pretended to be.
Huh?
And his name wasn't Jackson. It was Mason.
I don't get it.
You weren't supposed to. Jackson or Mason or whatever his name was sent here by the governor. You remember all those escapes you told me about?
Yes.
Well, the governor sent Jackson here to find out who was behind them.
Why wasn't I told that?
Because for all the governor knew, you might have been behind them.
Oh, that's nonsense. Who was?
We don't know. But it's pretty obvious now that the man Jackson was after found out about it and framed Fred's escape so he'd have a chance to kill him, with Fred getting the blame.
Yeah, then we're no closer to knowing who he is than we were before.
But I think we are.
How come?
Jackson knew who engineered those escapes. He named the man in his last report. That report never reached the governor.
It didn't?
Either the man he was after destroyed it, or else...
Or else what?
Or else it's still hidden somewhere in Jackson's quarters. He would have kept it hidden somewhere, of course, till he had a chance to send it out. And the man who killed him may never have found it.
Hmm. Well, I'll have a look for it immediately.
Well, I thought California and I would...
No. This is my job, Cassidy. I'll look for it.
All right, you do that, Warden. Let us know what you find.
There he is, Hoppy. There's Warden Davis coming out of Jackson's cottage right now. What are we going to do to him?
Wait a second.
He's lighting a match.
Wants to see what he's got. Yeah, he's looking at some papers, California.
He's going to set fire to him.
Come on. Hold on there. Grab him, California.
Hold still, you varmint. I got him, Hoppy.
I'll be doggoned. It's you.
What's going on here? Look here, Cassidy, what is this?
California just grabbed off the man we want, Warden.
Huh?
He thought at first it was you. When we got up close, we found out different.
Taggart? It's Taggart.
Sure it is. He gave himself away by stealing Jackson's report and trying to destroy it.
You'd never have caught me, Cassidy, if Jackson hadn't left this report around. I should have looked for it before.
If you had, you'd never have found it, Taggart. You there. Take this fellow away. Lock him up.
I'll do that. Come on, Taggart. This is going to be a pleasure.
Cut! Get your hands off. This was a clever capture, Cassidy. What I don't understand is how Taggart knew we were looking for that report. I thought all along I'd kept it a secret.
Not in a penitentiary, Warden. You were forgetting the prison grapevine. And that was what I was banking on.
Yes, of course. But tell me, what did you mean when you said he wouldn't have found that report even if he had looked for it before? Surely, if it's been there all the time...
But it hasn't.
What?
I needed that report to make the man we wanted betray himself. As soon as he heard about it, he figured he'd have to find it and destroy it.
Yes, I understand, but...
There's one thing he didn't know.
What was that?
Jackson had nothing to do with it. I wrote that report myself.
Well, I'll...
Don't trouble to express yourself, Warden. Ha, ha, ha! Come on, California, let's be on our way.
Yeah.
With a little manipulating, it looks like Hoppy finally measured the rope for the right neck. The next time we meet Hoppy and his sidekick, California, we find them driving 10,000 head of cattle to market. But before they complete their mission, they run into plenty of trouble at the hands of a rival outfit. That is, until Hoppy finds out who caused the stampede at Semple's Crossing. Don't miss this next Hopalong Cassidy adventure. Hopalong Cassidy, starring William Boyd, is transcribed and produced in the West by Walter White, Jr. Right Rope, Wrong Neck was written by Gibson Scott Fox, with original music under the personal direction of Albert Glasser. All stories are based upon the characters created by Clarence E. Mulford. This is a Commodore production.
From February of 1952, it's been Hopalong Cassidy with... Right Rope, Wrong Neck. In a moment, Crime Does Not Pay and Clothes Make the Woman, from January of 1950, as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Crime Does Not Pay was a syndicated program produced by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. It was based on the series of famous short films of the same name first heard on WMGM in New York in October of 1949 with Donald Buca as star. The show told of perpetrators of crime, often innocent kids who just got in too deep. It ran from January of 1951 as an MGM show, then picked up by Mutual in January of 52, continuing until December of that same year. Ira Marion wrote the scripts, and Marks B. Loeb directed. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear and Crime Does Not Pay with Clothes Make the Woman from January of 1950. Another classic radio program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
Crime does not pay.
How much you get for the coat, kid?
Half a C.
Not bad, not bad at all.
Oh, it's so bad it stinks.
Betty.
Save it, Jackie. You know it as well as I do. We take a chance on jail, snatch the coat. The price tag says 250, so the faking gives us half a C. 50 lousy bucks. That's a sucker's racket.
It's beer and pretzels, ain't it?
I hate beer. And pretzels only make me thirsty.
So beautiful. Maybe you got an idea?
Have I got an idea? Gather around, boys. Have I got an idea?
In the interest of good citizenship and law enforcement, we present Crime Does Not Pay, based on the famous Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer series of short subjects. Clothes Make the Woman, starring Jean Muir as Betty Page. Every year, hundreds of thousands of dollars are lost by department stores, large and small. Lost through the activities of shoplifters. Every store maintains its protective force, its detectives, but still the losses mount. In the end, the thieves are caught. But the stolen goods have passed through the hands of the fences into the possession of perfectly decent citizens who are susceptible to bargains. Betty Page and her boyfriend Jackie Benson worked in this racket. One of their operations was like this.
I'd like to see something a little more expensive, miss.
Yes, miss. My wife and I don't buy a new winter coat every year, and when we do, maybe you've got something with fur on it.
If you'll step this way, please.
Thank you.
Now, this is our most expensive line of fur trim cloth coats.
Oh, they're lovely. Which one should I try on, Jack, dear?
I like that blue one with the big fluffy collar.
That's a fox collar.
And may I put it on, miss?
Oh, certainly, madam.
Do you like the color, Jack, dear?
It looks a little dull. So blue, it's almost black.
Well, it won't look like this in daylight, will it, miss?
No, it'll be a little lighter.
Well, could we see it in daylight, miss? I noticed some windows out near the elevator.
I'm afraid I couldn't leave this part of the floor that long.
Oh, you wouldn't have to come along. My wife and I will be right back. Come along, dear.
People.
They all seem like nice people, Carter. They fool even me sometimes.
Really, Mary, how could you have let it go so long before you called me?
But it is a long walk to the windows for the elevator. We were so busy I didn't dare leave the floor, Mr. Martin. Oh, no. $250. I don't know how I'll ever pay it back.
Now, easy, easy, young lady. The store is insured, you know. Now, tell me once more. Exactly what happened.
Like I said, Mr. Stack, they seem like such a nice couple.
You hear the names?
Just Betty and Jack.
Go on.
Well, she liked the coat. He wanted to see it in daylight. I let them go to the elevators with it. Their window's there. Oh, I'm so sorry, Mr. Martin. She left her own coat on a chair.
A coat worth $12.50 at the most. After they asked to see the more expensive models. You're altogether too trusting, Mary.
Not anymore, I'm not.
Give you 50.
What, on a $250 coat?
After we risked our necks to get it?
I left my own coat there. My coat cost me $100.
You get $50.
Oh, now look here, Louis.
Now I know why they call you Fagin. Some fence you are.
Save it. I gotta get some profit.
You didn't do any work.
I'm taking risks, ain't I? For risk, a businessman is entitled to a profit.
What risk do you take?
What will I get out of it? A cloth coat with a piece of fox. $100. So I give you 50, so we come out even.
Yeah, and we do the work.
Enough talk. 50. Take it or leave it.
Jack?
What's the use? Take it, Betty. It's better than nothing. Joey, hiya, fella.
Cold. I could use a drink.
Hey, Betty, it's a dip.
Hi, Joey.
Beautiful, a man wants a drink.
I heard him. I'm reading the paper.
Okay, honey. Betty's sore, Joey. Fagin chiseled us as usual.
Louis? That thief?
Yeah. Well, he pays as much as anybody.
I suppose.
This stuff ain't as good as it would have been if we had got more for the coat.
Not too bad. How much you get for the coat, kid?
Half a C.
Not bad at all.
Oh, it's so bad it stinks.
So beautiful. Maybe you got an idea?
Have I got an idea? Gather round, boys. Have I got an idea? Right here in the paper.
The newspaper?
Uh-huh. You're in on this, too. We'll need an extra hand.
What's my cut?
Three ways equal.
Out of what we get from Louis?
This idea works so slick, there'll be plenty for everybody, even at Louis' rate of pay.
That sounds interesting. Go ahead, kid.
Just let me read you this. See the picture?
What, that society dame? What's she got that you ain't, baby?
That sable coat. $10,000 if it's a dollar.
So, kid, so?
Listen. Mrs. Louise Williams, shown above at a recent charity function in Smart Rosedale Manor, is one of the sponsors of the Milk Fund luncheon to be given at the home of Mrs. Joseph Barton 2 weeks from today. Also present at the forthcoming benefit affair will be Mrs. Barlow Sampson, Miss Josephine Cowan, Mrs.
Good afternoon. Oh. The service entrance is around at the back.
Sorry, there's no time for that. Mrs. Barton called us at the last minute and told us the luncheon guests will be arriving in just about 45 minutes.
Very well, come in. Where do you wish to set up?
Anywhere convenient off this foyer. Joe, give me a hand with the coat racks and...
I'm Jameson.
Yes, well, Jameson, where can the lady go to freshen up?
There's a lavatory down the hall. Third door on the right.
Thank you,
Jack. These are the bases for the coat racks, Jack. Last of the load.
Okay. Pull around the back and get comfortable in the car till later.
Right, till later.
Shall I send someone to lend a hand with the rack?
Well, you could hold this then. Well... No, I guess you couldn't.
Is there anything you will need before the guests arrive?
No, there's nothing I'll need. Except for you to go ahead and tend to your buttling, if that's the word.
How do I look, darling?
You in black satin. Hey, it's neat. How'd you pour yourself into that? And why? There's no men around this operation except me, Joey, and that Jameson.
Well, that's why, dear. Some of these society ladies show everything they've got, and I intend to keep your mind on me and the job. Are the racks ready?
All in place. Hey, look at the frail coming down the stairs.
That's Mrs. Barton, you dope. Now you know why I'm wearing what I'm wearing.
May I ask, please, what you're doing here?
Oh, I'm terribly sorry, Mrs. Barton. You are Mrs. Barton, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Explain yourself, please, young lady.
Well, your butler, Jameson, called us. The Acme Portable Hat and Coat Checking Service. This is our specialty service in private homes. And half of our tips go to the fund which the functions we service are given for.
That's a nice idea. James Jameson didn't tell me he'd called you.
Well, he called just half an hour ago in the rush of preparation. He must have forgotten.
Perhaps. I've been dressing during the last half hour. Oh, excuse me, the door.
I'll answer it, madam.
Never mind, Jameson. I want you to check the service pantry.
Thank you, madam.
Oh, what a life he leads. Yes, madam. No, madam. I'll do it, madam.
Shh, quiet, you fool.
Louise, darling.
Molly, dear.
I'm so glad you came early.
Well, I thought I might have something to do.
Not a thing, darling, not a thing. Except have a cocktail and keep me company.
Well, that would be a pleasure.
Check your coat, dear. Tips go to the milk fund.
Of course. It's a wonderful idea. I do so hate to have all the bedrooms mussed with coats and things.
It was Jameson's idea.
One of these days, I'm going to steal that man right from under your roof.
You try, darling. Just you try. Oh, no, wait. Just a moment. Let me see that coat on you.
Oh, haven't you seen it before?
Only in that picture in the Tribune. Oh, it's luscious. Leopold, of course.
Oh, thank you, dear. Yes, of course it's Leopold. Could anyone else match skins like these? Here's my coat, young lady.
Thank you, ma'am. We'll take care of it for you.
May I compliment you, young lady, on the way you pleased Mrs. Barton's guest?
Thanks, Jameson. Now you've said your piece. Run along.
Well, really. After all, one could be polite.
What's with him? Is he on a make or something?
Could be. I understand black satin has an effect on some men.
Oh, it has on me, baby. Nothing any of the dames in there was wearing can make them look like you.
Save it, darling. We got work to do.
Did he hear you?
Sure. Joey heard me. He's coming.
Okay, kids. I'm out here waiting all set.
Here they come, Joey. Wait till Louie sees this hall. Mink, Persian lamb, broadtail, sable, and all real.
Here, Joey. Here's the first load. There's about 30 coats here.
No, no, Jackie. Not all of them.
You want to leave some?
Got him. Next pile.
Hold it, Joey. Betty's going nuts.
Not me. I'm smart. The three coats you just put through that window are worth about 15 grand. Okay. We take six more, including Louise Williams. We'll have over 50 grand in the hall. But we leave the rest. So nobody will suspect anything until the women whose coats we took come looking for them. By that time, we'll be miles away. Get it, Jackie?
Got it, beautiful.
In just a moment, Crime Does Not Pay will continue with Clothes Make the Woman.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Now we continue with Crime Does Not Pay, starring Jean Muir as Betty Page in Clothes Make the Woman. Goods have little value unless there is a market for them. It's up to the fence, the receiver of the goods, to find that market. In the case of Betty Page and her friends, Louis Fagan Keller had to find the market. He waited a sufficient length of time and then approached his first possible customer.
Who is it?
You decent Patty?
Who is it?
Louis Keller, remember?
Not my favorite bargain hunter.
And finder. Do I get into the dressing room with the best torch singer in town?
At least in your opinion. Come on in, Louie. Get yourself comfortable. I gotta make a change.
Yeah. Hey, you're looking wonderful, Patty.
Louie, when I come out from behind this screen, you're gonna need another word.
That's all.
Go away, Louie. No top, no back, practically no front.
And cost an arm and a leg. I'll bet on that. Patty, in a market for a real bargain?
Well, what is it this time, Louie? Heist?
No. Sable.
Yikes. You got it on you?
I'm not crazy yet. You don't carry 10 G's worth of sables around like they were silver foxes.
Are they hot?
You know me better than that, Patty.
Do I? Say, how I look?
Good enough to eat, and then some. Sables go good with gold lamé.
Not hot sables.
I don't peddle hot stuff, Patty. You know that.
Well, how then?
Well, some people went broke. I bailed them out of hot. Wife gave me the coat for cash.
Oh, I believe you. How much?
Five G's.
Too much.
What's the offer?
2.5.
Not a nickel, less than 3.5. I gave 2 foot myself.
3.5, it's a deal. When?
Tonight, when you finish your last number. That, Patty, is Keller Service.
Lieutenant, we've waited so long. You don't seem to understand.
We understand, Mrs. Barton. You called us here when the theft was discovered. We questioned your butler and the other servants. Your butler says the coat check people told him you called them. You say they told you he called them. Total, zero.
When we have nothing to work with, Mrs. Barton, there's practically nothing we can do.
Except wait.
Wait, Lieutenant. How long? For what?
No one knows how long. For a break.
A break? But surely the insurance company...
They have their own people. They've seen us. They think it's your butler.
Jameson? Impossible. He worked for my father, now for me. He's known me since I was born.
People get funny ideas sometimes when they need money.
Jameson wants for nothing. He never will.
Nothing you know of, Mrs. Barton.
Now, let it be, Stone. The butler's all right. So are the other servants. In fact, they're so all right and so used to everything being normal, they were perfect setups for the crowd that pulled this job.
Surely, Lieutenant, there must be something you can do. I won't be able to hold up my head in my house to have such a thing happen.
When the break comes, Mrs. Barton, we'll be ready.
But what kind of a break, Lieutenant?
Mrs. Barton, 85% of the population of our prisons talk themselves in. We'll get our break with patience.
You should have seen her drool when she saw that coat, Patty.
I drooled myself. I wish I could have kept it. Patty, Laurel, without a brain in her head, gets to wear that coat.
What do we care? She's got the coat, we got the dough.
I know you kids had come through with a big idea once, anyway.
Once? What do you mean by that?
Well, you can't pull a stunt like that again.
Oh, can't we?
Now, look, Betty, let's not take chances. We pulled down $15,000 on that deal and no income taxes.
Shut up and listen.
Okay, okay.
Aren't you riding high, kid?
Never mind that, Fagan. Get this. There hasn't been a word in the papers about the Barton job. Not one word. How they hate to be taken, that kind of people. But okay, that means nobody's talking. So for the next job, we pick a spot a few miles from Rosedale, and nobody will be wise.
Smart. Smart as a whip.
But not too soon. There's no sense taking chances when we don't have to.
What scared you, darling?
Dick Davis.
Who's he?
You remember, don't you, the party Joey threw to celebrate our haul?
What, that little one with a squint?
That's him.
Best second story man I ever did business with.
Yeah, well, he's in a tank.
What?
Yesterday. Went back to a neighborhood too soon. Picked him up, caught him on a job.
Oh, so he pulled a boner.
And he had a piece on him. Armed robbery. 20 years.
Poor Jake.
His own fault for getting caught. They won't take me that way. See what I've got, boys.
Eddie, where'd you get that piece?
It's a souvenir, a war souvenir. 25 caliber, a lady's gun. Fellow I bought it from says it packs a terrific punch.
That's no good, kid. Lose it someplace.
If we do another job, don't carry it.
Not carry it? Now, boys, you know everything's going on these days. A girl wouldn't think of wearing her minx unless she had some protection.
Look, Davis, we're not playing dominoes. You got a choice. 20 years to life or armed robbery, or we'll pin the 4th Street killing on you.
You can't do that. You can't, Lieutenant. You wouldn't burn an innocent man.
Oh, wouldn't I?
But I don't know nothing. I always worked alone. You know that. Please, Lieutenant, give me a break, will you?
You had to have someone sell your hauls for you. Who was it?
I sold it myself. Peddler. Honest.
Stone,
yeah.
Is the conference room free? The one downstairs.
If it isn't, it will be. Say, did you know, Lieutenant, they just did a new soundproofing job down there. Yeah, man could yell his lungs out and nobody'd ever hear him.
Wait a minute, wait a minute.
That's so. How nice. What do you say we test the soundproofing with little Richard here?
No, you can't. It's against the law.
Listen to who's talking now, Stone.
Against the law, huh? Well.
Could I make a deal?
What kind?
Well, maybe Maybe you drop the arm part of the charge.
What for?
Will you?
Let's see the size of your merchandise.
It's the gang that pulled the Rosedale man a job.
The Rosedale job?
You in on that?
No, not me. But I went to a party. They were celebrating, see? Jackie Benson, Betty Page, Joey the Dip Waters, even Louis Fagan Keller, the fence. You see, Joey, he had a few too many, see? I got the whole layout. Is it a deal, Lieutenant? Is it?
Patty, I want to see your new coat.
On or off, Lieutenant?
Save it for the suckers out front, Patty. Where's the coat?
In the closet. And I paid good, honest money for that coat.
Yeah, sure. The money was honest, but how about the man who sold it to you? How about Louis Keller? This it?
Yeah, that's it.
What are you doing? Please stop it! You're ruining the coat. You got no
right to
do it.
Shut up, Patty. This is stolen goods and you know it. See. Yeah. Here's the furrier's coat, Mark.
The what?
Furrier's coat on the skins under the lining. Good as fingerprints. You don't mind if I borrow your sables for a few days, do you, Patty? I'll give you a receipt. Well, Mr. Leopold?
But of course it is my coat. I know it even without the markings.
Whose is it?
Mrs. Williams. Louise Williams. For her, I made it. Special. I matched the skins like no other coat in the world.
You keep a record that'll stand up in court.
But of course, always. You know that, Lieutenant.
Yes, Mrs. Barton, we got our break. We found Mrs. Williams' coat.
Oh, Louise will be delighted. No more than I am, Lieutenant.
I'm sure you are. Now then, Mrs. Barton, we'll get all the coats back if you'll cooperate with us.
What can I do?
You have a lot of friends, Mrs. Barton. Do you think one of them would go so far as to arrange a benefit affair like yours? Say, someone who lives about 10 miles away from you, Mrs. Barton?
Definitely not bad. How much do you suppose this one's worth, Betty?
Not much. About $3,000. They're better ones. Where's Joey? You whistled for him 5 minutes ago.
It's a different layout here. What's eating you?
I don't know. I just don't like the feeling around here.
For the love of Mike, the girl's getting sensitive.
Sensitive? Didn't you notice who's here? Where's Joey?
He'll be along in a minute. Who's here?
Mrs. Barton and the Williams dame.
Oh, so that's why you ducked behind the racks and let me check them.
They'd remember a woman.
All right, it's all right. They didn't see her. There's Joey. He's not picking, kid.
Here they come.
Okay, Betty.
Here's three for a while. I'll get some more.
Right. Now watch it, Joe. Hey, Betty, that's not Joe at the car.
No, it's not, Benson. Cop. None of that. There's no exit for you, Benson.
I told her we couldn't pull the same stunt twice.
Where's the dame?
Betty!
The dame's crammed, Lieutenant.
What?
She came out from behind the coat racks with a gun. Got out the door before we could grab her.
Oh, we'll get her. You take care of this monkey while I get out the alarm. You had a good hunch, Stone. Restroom covered?
Inside and out, Lieutenant.
Check. Let's go. Pardon me, miss. You're Betty Page, aren't you?
Sorry. I'm afraid you've made a mistake. I'm not...
Yes, you are. The young man over there says so. His name is Jack Benson.
Jack Benson? A full of filthy rotten...
Oh, no. You can't blame a man for buying his way out of a long-term rap.
I can blame a man for anything.
Got a gun, Lieutenant.
Drop it. Dirty rotten.
Ladies, don't play with guns. Not around me, anyway.
You didn't have to break my wrist. You didn't have to.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about that. It'll have plenty of time to heal where you're going.
Now, here in person is Jean Muir.
To me, the most interesting side of the character of Betty Page is her background, a part of her which, unfortunately, there's no time to dwell on at length. Invariably, though, girls like Betty Page reached and passed a point in their lives where they were denied the nice things they saw other girls have, through no fault of their own, and denied, too, the means to get those things honestly. With a good education, a job, or the future, Betty would have become a useful citizen. Her mind, and she had a good one, would then have worked for, not against, society. Because for us, as well as for the Betty Pages of this world, crime does not pay.
Thank you, Jean Muir. Crime Does Not Pay is written by Ira Marion and directed by Mark D. Lowe, with music composed and conducted by John Gart. Technical advisor is Burton D. Turtis. The events, characters, and names used in the story you've just heard are fictitious. Any similarity is purely coincidental.
From January of 1950, it's been Jean Muir starring in Crime Does Not Pay with Clothes Make the Woman. That's all we have time for today, but join us again next week and invite a friend to listen to more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those thrilling days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you, sodio, volio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
This program came to you from Hollywood.